For WBAA, I'm Betty Carson. Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library, reviews award-winning author Molly Peacock's newest book, The Paper Garden, An Artist Begins Her Life's Work at 72. Schinkel begins by reading from chapter one.
Imagine starting your life's work at 72. At just that age, Mary Granville Pendarvis Delaney, a fan of George Frederick Handel, a sometime dinner partner of satirist Jonathan Swift, invented a precursor of what we know as collage. One afternoon in 1772, she noticed how a piece of colored paper matched the dropped petal of a geranium. After making that vital imaginative connection between paper and petal, she lifted the 18th century equivalent of an X-Acto blade, she'd have called it a scalpel, or a pair of filigree-handled scissors, the kind that must have had a nose so sharp and delicate that you could almost imagine it picking up a scent. With the instrument alive in her still rather smooth-skinned hand, she began to maneuver, carefully cutting the exact geranium petal shape from the scarlet paper. Then she snipped out another, and another, and another, with the trance-like efficiency of repetition, commencing the most remarkable work of her life. From the opening of The Paper Garden, An Artist Begins Her Life's Work at 72, by Molly Peacock. Today's book is quirky, romantic, and oddly affecting. As the subtitle notes, The Paper Garden features an artist who came into her own at the age of 72. Quite a feat, especially considering she did so during the 18th century in Great Britain. Here's the artist's story in brief. Born into the lower rungs of British aristocracy at the very beginning of the 18th century, which means 1700, Mary Delaney was a lady of leisure, if not of overwhelming riches. Her life was a prototype for 18th century nobility, nonetheless. For women, a life dominated at first by their father, who considered his 17-year-old daughter Mary's marriage partner's family connection as more important than love. Indeed, Mary's first marriage was not one filled with love, as we learn with this anecdote from her diary. "I was married with great pomp," Mary wrote. "I lost, not life indeed, but I lost all that makes life desirable, joy and peace of mind. The day was come when I was to leave all I loved and valued, to go to a remote country with a man I looked upon as my tyrant, my jailer, one that I was determined to obey and oblige, but found it impossible to love." Her husband dies before too long into their marriage, and Mary dallied quite a while before committing once again, at least in the view of the 18th century. Though not born to riches, Mary was nonetheless well-versed in the arts, in literature, and was a maven for British culture, counting, as we heard, George Frederick Handel as a friend. She delighted in attending his concerts, and she called her sometime dinner partner Jonathan Swift a friend. She was, for all of her adult life, most closely emotional with friends of her own sex, and married once again, this time for love, at the age of 43, to, of all people, Jonathan Swift's friend, Dean Patrick Delaney, a Protestant Irish clergyman. It was her marriage to clergyman Delaney that set Mary's life into high gear, for this was a marriage in which both husband and wife were in love. Mary delved into painting, into drawing, and into cultural interests. As our author writes, "Mary bore no children, but at 43, she allowed herself to be kidnapped by love and to flout her family to marry Jonathan Swift's friend, Dean Patrick Delaney. They lived in Delville, an 11-acre estate near Dublin, where Mary attended to a multitude of crafts, from shell decoration to crewel work, and with the dean, renovated his lands into one of the first picturesque gardens of the British Isles." Sadly for her, but fortunate for those who admire her artistry, Mary Delaney turned to making mosaics, as she called them, after the death of her beloved husband. So it was that at the age of 72, she took up her scissors and began an artist's journey that would make the most of her energy for most of the rest of her life. It was when she had been immobilized because of a problem with her foot at the age of 72 that for some reason she became captivated by that geranium petal. As our author writes, it was at this moment, retrained in her calligraphy, awakened to the world but required to be motionless, that she noticed something. Immobilized at a table in her apartment, she inspected the air as a scarlet petal from a geranium dropped to a dark surface below. Assembled around her were the tools of her entertainment while she was off her feet, wallpaper, paints, inks, thread, scissors. At that moment, the lifelong habit of simile dropped into place just as that petal descended. Nearby lay a piece of paper nearly the identical color. As her friends drew, painted, and received yet another shipment of porcelain or bugs or roots or shells, Mary, alone at her table, took up her scissors, having been told like a child that she must sit still. When her friend came in to check on her, shocked that she had taken apart her new scarlet geranium, then delighted that what Mary had composed were the petals in paper replication, the first of the great work had begun. "I have invented a new way of imitating flowers," she wrote. Right then, Mary Delaney's friend of more than 40 years supplied exactly what was necessary. Applause. Her friend began applauding Mary in 1772 and continued nonstop for 10 years. Her delight, her approbation, her support, her enthusiasm, and the weight of her opinion because of her enormous wealth carried the word of Mary's innovations throughout the botanical, artistic, and aristocratic worlds. Horace Walpole, Sir Joshua Reynolds, Hannah More, and Sir Joseph Banks talked about Mrs. Delaney, evaluating what she did because her friend the powerful Duchess brought her work to their attention. Poet Molly Peacock does a wonderful job of telling Mary's story both as an artist and, as importantly, telling her life story, how her life brought her to find joy and beauty in art, with a marvelous blend of narrative and extended diary excerpts from Mary's lifelong diary entries. The seamless writing over the course of some 350-plus pages pulls us so effortlessly forward that the length of the book is hardly noticed. This is a story that celebrates both the curiosity and the family intrigues of Mary's long life. There's quite a bit on both of her marriages, both the early marriage, which was certainly not a happy one for Mary, and the latter one to the Protestant clergyman, which was the love of her life. The Paper Garden is a wonder-filled blend, then, of botany, art, and gossip. Consider, for example, this further anecdote about Mary and her meeting with, of all people, King George III, yes, that King George III, and his wife, Queen Caroline, in the year 1778. Mary Delaney was, as our author states, a fiercely devoted subject of blonde King George III, the same King George who, of course, presided over the American Revolution, which, as we all know, had begun 2 years earlier in 1776. Be that as it may, Mary Delaney meets with the king and the queen in 1778, about 6 years into her making of mosaics or flower collages, as we would say today. Here's Molly Peacock's telling of that particular anecdote. Mrs. Delaney, who did not seem to feel her age when it came to climbing into a carriage to go to Luton Hoo or Bill Hill on a hunt for a plant, felt very much her age at the coming spectacle of this breakfast with the king and the queen. She took to her previously unsuccessful tactic and retreated to her ground floor apartments. There she peered out of her windows and down the long approaching road from Windsor at the entourage. Two princes on horseback with their riding master, two footmen, two grooms, the king and queen, two more servants, a post chaise with four horses, and another prince and a princess, and the duchess's daughter jostling inside, then two more servants on horseback, then a coach with six horses, ferrying more princesses and governesses, more footmen, more servants, more attendants, two more coaches with six horses and more princes and their precepts and more servants and footmen and more dignitaries. Well, even Mrs. Delaney couldn't record all the ranks, totaling 33 servants and 56 personages for a total of 89 guests at this breakfast. Mrs. Delaney still crept behind the curtains of her long windows. She wasn't dressed for company, but Queen Charlotte sent Lady Weymouth to find her, and the fact that she wasn't in a party dress notwithstanding, Mrs. D was escorted to the Queen and the princesses. The King, meanwhile, was inspecting the Duchess's china collection with his two eldest sons. Then everyone except Mrs. D joined them. She was catching her breath, sitting quietly in the drawing room. But when they returned, the Queen sat down with her again, and they talked. What? Court gossip? The fractious American colonies? No, no, they talked craft. Then the birthday fare entered on platters and salvers and tureens, bowls and cups, tea and hot chocolate, bread and butter, rolls, cakes. The King drank chocolate. The princes and princesses ate everything. The Duchess brought the Queen her tea, but she insisted on carrying back her cup herself. Then His Majesty, who had retreated for relief from his public life into his family and his childhood hobby of tracking his chlorophylled subjects to the exclusion of his human ones, called for the great floral scrapbook. Quote, "The King asked me if I had added to my book of flowers and desired he might see it. It was placed on a table before the Queen, who was attended by the Princess Royal and the rest of the ladies, the King standing and looking over them," end quote. Like any artist who has to stand by while people peruse the work, Mrs. Delaney said, quote, "I kept my distance, till the Queen called me to answer some question about a flower," end quote. As she came toward the table, 78 years old and perhaps unsteady on her pins, George III did something endearing and unusual. He brought Mrs. Delaney a chair. Then he, quote, "set it at the table opposite to the Queen and graciously took me by the hand and seated me in it," end quote. Mrs. D was totally flustered. Not the thing that royalty was expected to do. But the Queen said, quote, "sit down, sit down. It is not everybody has a chair brought to them by the King." Well, the illustrations in the Paper Garden are exquisite and certainly necessary and offer a beauty we rarely see today, collage not being one of the 21st century's featured arts. As the author notes again and again, the incredible delicacy, botanical accuracy, and intimate nature of these 850, yes, 850 flower collages is extraordinary and is best shown in the selected photos of them showcased in the Paper Gardens pages. We don't get 850 of them, but we certainly do get a nice gathering here. How to conclude a book or a review of this extraordinary 18th century woman who was born in 1700 and first discovered her most exquisite artwork at the age of 72? Well, here's how our author Mary Peacock concludes, and I think it's a great way to wrap up our review as well. As our author writes, "Living a full life requires invention, but that needs a previous pattern, if only to react against or happily to refigure in the making of something new. A multitude of vectors brings us to the moment where we are and where we love or cough or say the wrong thing or fail or feel our fate in what we fear, or to a moment where clarity descends and we understand the world simply from having observed it. To search a drawer or a pocketbook or a botanical bibliography, even to search a littered table or beneath the leaf of a geranium, means feeling for one's conscience and one's heart, looking for something that will complete, with a key, a tissue, a truth, a love, a victory, a seed, an instant of one's being, or perhaps one's whole life. In a sliver of knowledge, time is obliterated and reinstated. A single instance, the fall of a petal, or the swirl of the paper that imitates and becomes it, flourishes in answering likeness." The Paper Garden is a book that inhabits its own genre. And in many ways, The Paper Garden may be just the type of biography, life experience, or meditation upon art that you're looking to read. It certainly caught my attention. I think it will catch yours. The Paper Garden, An Artist, Begins Her Life's Work at 72 by Molly Peacock. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.
That was Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library. He's reviewed The Paper Garden by Molly Peacock.